Today on Straight Talk Africa, the political crisis in Burundi continues unabated. Reports of attacks on civilians and high-level officials continue. Regional leaders and the international community have yet to come up with an appropriate response. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, you're welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, May 4th. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the ongoing political crisis in Burundi.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our question of the week through social media and emails. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his intention to seek another term last April. It was a decision that ultimately plunged the nation into a major political crisis. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
More than 25 million people have fled Burundi in the last year. More than 400 Burundians have been killed, and thousands more have been injured and arrested since President Pierre Nkurunziza's announcement that he would run for another term. Activists, senior government officials, and journalists are among those being targeted and killed. Last week, a military advisor to the vice president was killed along with his wife and daughter. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and others have condemned the violence and attacks. Mediation talks have repeatedly failed to ease tensions or end the protests and crackdowns. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa is now the new regional mediator for Burundi. Talks that were to begin last Monday in Arusha have been postponed. Officials say peace talks will resume in a few weeks. They say more consultation with the Burundian government and its opposition is needed. Meanwhile, arrests and attacks continue in and around Bujumbura. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says the situation is out of control.
The time for piecemeal responses and fiddling around the edges is over. The situation in Burundi demands a robust, decisive response from the international community. I called last month on the Security Council to consider all possible steps to stop the ongoing violence and prevent a regional conflict. Impunity currently enjoyed by perpetrators of human rights violations, as well as by members of unidentified armed groups, is contributing to individuals increasingly taking the law into their own violent hands.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Council, Keith Harper, explains that all avenues must be pursued to stop the fighting.
The United States strongly believes that the international community must use all the tools available to push for an immediate end of the cycle of violence perpetrated by both the security forces and elements of the armed opposition.
The International Criminal Court has opened an investigation into human rights violations. There are increasing reports of torture, disappearances, and deadly attacks by both security personnel and those opposing President Nkurunziza. Members of the Burundian diaspora and exiled civil society leaders demonstrated in front of the United Nations in New York last week.
We really need to all stand together. This is not a Burundi issue. This is not an African issue. This is a humanity issue. This can easily turn into a regional war. The UN must wake up.
They are calling on the international community to send a robust UN police force to help protect civilians as the country enters a second year of political crisis. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Ernest Ndabashinze, Burundian ambassador to the United States, and Frederick Nkundikije, a reporter with VOA's Central Africa Service. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. And joining us live via Skype from the city of Calgary in Canada is Katie Nivyabandi, a Burundian poet and activist. Well, I have to say, Katie, that I'm equally gratified, of course, to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Mm-hmm. So am I, Ishaka. I've watched Straight Talk Africa for a long time, so thank you.
You're most welcome. But first, the Burundian government says former President Colonel Jean-Baptiste Bagaza, retired but not tired, has died in Belgium, where he received medical care for 2 weeks. Colonel Bagaza, 70, ruled Burundi for over a decade between 1976 and 1987 after seizing power. His regime was marked by a period of relative development and stability. He was deposed in a bloodless coup by Major Pierre Buyoya. Well, gentlemen, your immediate reaction to the death, of course, of Colonel Bagaza.
Thank you, Chaka, for having me.
You're most welcome, sir.
First of all, allow me personally to say how I was saddened this morning when I woke up to hear that President Bagaza passed away. So all my prayers are going to his family, and ask God to bless his family and comfort his family and all the people of Burundi.
What do you think he's likely to be best remembered for?
President Bagaza, when he was in office, he realized many things, especially in terms of infrastructure. Many roads have been constructed, hydropower, high schools, universities. So it was really important because after the French regime, President Michombero, there was no infrastructure in Burundi. So mm-hmm. he made a lot of progress. He did a lot for Burundi.
Michombero probably didn't have much time to do that because he had a reputation for hitting the bottle very hard.
Yeah, we are talking about President Bagaza this time. So
I see.
The only thing I can say is that he made a lot of things in terms of infrastructure, and the period was calm, so many Burundians managed to go to school, high school, and university. So it was very, very important.
What about you, Frederick?
Well, I learned about his death this morning around 6. He passed away in a hospital in Brussels, St. Elizabeth Hospital. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since this morning, we've been trying to get reactions from especially those who worked closely with him. Just spoke with the former president, Pierre Buyoya, who toppled Bagaza. And he said, you know, he was lauding his accomplishments. It is needless to repeat what the ambassador said. Bagaza is known for having developed the country. He ruled the country for more than 10 years, and for the 10 years, there was nothing but peace in Burundi.
What do you think is likely to be his legacy?
His legacy, obviously, he will be remembered for his accomplishments, but also people know him for, you know, harshly fighting the Catholic Church, and that is two things that he's going to be remembered for.
His weaknesses, from your vantage point?
According to what President Buyoya said, he, towards the end of his administration, he had a tendency to become like a dictator, and then Buyoya says that is the reason why he toppled him.
Show me, of course, a soldier who seizes power, by, of course, force of arms, and I'll show you a non-democrat. Well, at least someone close to a dictator. Well, what about you, Katie? Your immediate reaction when you first heard the news?
Yes, I heard of it as well this morning, although for the past few days we had been hearing that he was ill. So, of course, my condolences to his family. And I concur with the ambassador and Frederick. He will be remembered for the infrastructure that he put in place. In fact, most of the infrastructure that we still have in Burundi today was built by him. And I think that will be his greatest legacy. It's true that towards the end of his rule, he became more of a dictator, as my predecessor just said, not only towards the Catholic Church, but also towards freedom of expression in general. But overall, his contribution to the economy and the development of Burundi is I think, has no precedent in what other presidents have done so far.
Katie, I remember when I first went to your country back in 1994, a lot of people on the streets of Bujumbura told me pretty much the same things, but they also added that during his tenure, there were no massacres. Do you agree?
I was very young at the time. I do remember, yes, there were no massacres, but I do remember something. For instance, I remember that when he was on TV, because we only had one TV station at the time, and we'd have the national anthem, and he would come on. And if I would try to make a comment about him or say something funny, as any child would say, I remember that all adults would tell you, shh, don't say that, don't say that. There was a sense of, don't speak of him, don't speak about him, don't criticize publicly, which now, in retrospect, when I look back, tells me that it was, and this was towards the end, of course, of his regime, which tells me that, you know, there was a state of fear. And if there were no massacres, I'm not sure if there was complete freedom either. But I'd reserve my comments to that. I was far too young. What I can speak about is today, the present, what I know.
Very interesting. What about you, Mr. Ambassador?
Yeah, for sure, Bagaza, we have a legacy of building infrastructure, boosting economy.
He built the roads, he built factories.
He built
schools.
Hydropower. So this was very, very important. On the side of human rights, you have to question many issues. For instance, the question of inclusiveness of all Burundians in institutions, in the army. These issues were not really addressed by President Bagaza, for sure.
I see. Yeah. Frederick, you have obviously been earning a living, among other things, covering Burundi, your native country, very, very closely. Give us an update as to what really is happening or not happening there.
Yeah, what is not happening is obviously the talks that were postponed last Monday. All Burundians are looking forward to having those politicians sit down and talk so they can have some kind of peace. It's been a year that the turmoil started in Burundi, so it is high time Burundians really, you know, had some kind of truce. So remember that the talks were postponed on Monday, but this is some kind of reminiscent to what happened early in July when, you know, talks were expected to happen again in Arusha. For some reason, they were postponed again. When they are postponed for the second time, that's kind of concerning and worrisome.
Any particular group that seemed to be developing cold feet doesn't seem to be interested in making sure that these talks are held?
The first talks, which were postponed in January, I guess the government of Burundi had said that they had invited people who should not be there in the first place, because the government says that there are some people who have, you know, bloody hands, who have actually played a role into the turmoil, the failed coup, and also the violence that ensued. So Burundian government is kind of adamant. They do not want anybody who they accuse of having participated in the coup to be part of the talks.
What about the issue of the new mediator, former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa? Does this mean that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is out of the picture?
I don't think so. According to the news that we got, former President Mkapa will be there to have some kind of supporting role or helping out with all the talks. There were elections in Uganda, and President Museveni was not available all the time. But it was good for so many people who know about Burundi to have somebody like former President Mkapa, because he knows quite well Burundians. The first talks that lasted 4 months, took place in Arusha during the time he was also president. I guess he's going to be able to do, you know, maybe to, he's going to try to have Burundians strike a peace deal again.
Very interesting. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Burundi Violence. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Thank you very much. And we are back here, of course, Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Mr. Ambassador. Ernest, what is the position of the Burundian government in as far as the new mediator, Benjamin Mkapa, is concerned? Because there are some people who at one time had some concerns regarding some of the statements that he had actually uttered.
First of all, allow me to stress that the government of Burundi has made clear his desire for national dialogue, because we believe all Burundians deserve to be on board in all processes related to the construction of Burundi, related to the future. Mm. It's the future of our kids, so we have all to be on board. The national dialogue will be conducted in accordance with the Security Council resolutions 2248 of November 2015 and 2279 of April 2016. You know, if we have a look on our past, on our history, mm-hmm. we have seen at many occasions people promoting their own interests through violence. Time has come to discourage these habits. So it means that those people who were involved in the failed military coup of May, they are not welcome for dialogue.
They're not welcome for the dialogue.
Of course, otherwise we'll be promoting violence as a tool to come to power. And as Burundians, we know what it means. We still remember what happened in 1993 when President Ndadaye was killed, Speaker of was killed, and consequences in terms of many people killed, infrastructure destroyed. It's very important. We have to put an end to that. We deserve stability. We deserve peace. So we have to discard this kind of habit. Regarding the facilitator, His Excellency President Mkapa, from the government of Burundi, it's clear we fully support this process initiated by East African community. All head of states in the East African community are really working closely to ensure that peace and security are prevailing in Burundi.
Very interesting. Katie, are you there?
I am very much here.
You know that in February there was a delegation of five African leaders which went to the Burundian capital, Bujumbura, under the auspices of the African Union, and that was, in fact, the presidents of South Africa, Gabon, Senegal, Mauritania, I think, and the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. They had discussions with Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, and I got a sense that both parties had, in fact, agreed to what they characterized as inclusive dialogue. What happened? Because the ambassador here seems to be saying, frankly, that these are conditional, talks.
Of course, what happened is that the government has continued to drag its feet towards the implementation of these talks. As you have just heard, what the ambassador is saying is completely contradictory to what President Nkurunziza committed to with the five African heads of state. So by saying that the government only wants to talk with a certain group of people, it is imposing conditions. You do not impose conditions when you're negotiating, when you're doing peace talks. That's the first thing. The second thing I'd like to say in reaction to what he just mentioned is he's saying that we cannot open the door to dialogue to people who have perpetrated acts of violence. I would like to comment on that. The opposition and anyone really who is showing an opposition to the current regime is being now called a terrorist. That's the new term that is being used, and they refer to the May 3rd coup attempt as as a point of reference. I would like to come back to the real perpetrators of violence. Let us remember today on May 4th, exactly on this day a year ago, the people of Burundi went peacefully to the streets. And the first party that started to impose violence on the other was the government of Burundi. It's the one that started shooting at people. So it is the first one that's really started the violence, and that is really, in a sense, the terrorist here. So saying that they will not welcome those who are being violent today is absolutely it doesn't make sense. And I think, quite frankly, to use your term, Shaka, I think that the government of Burundi and Pierre Nkurunziza himself have no intention, anyway, of leaving power. So they will comply once in a while with what the international community is saying. Yes, we will sit down for talks. But as you have seen, they keep dragging their feet. And I think they're saving time. They're trying to buy time, to buy as much time as possible to be able to finish this controversial term. And then, we stay in this limbo, in this state of limbo that we've been in for the past year, where nothing really happens. We're sort of in a stateless state, in a failed state. But at the end of the day, the government is still there. Nkurunziza is still sitting at the top of Burundi. So it works out well for him at the end of the day.
Let me ask you a question, Katie, and talk to me really from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Bujumbura heart and soul, because you told me you come from the capital.
Mm-hmm, I do.
What are Burundians fighting for, really? Because when you look at your constitution, for example, I will tell you that it is probably one of the most progressive documents that I have yet seen. It, of course, reflects proportional representation. You have power sharing between the major ethnic communities and what have you. What are Burundians fighting for, really?
I identify myself with this generation, this young generation of Burundians who are tired of the decades of conflicts, particularly ethnic-fueled conflict that we have lived, and who today, for the first time, at least a year ago, had an opportunity to start a new, clean chapter of democracy, of justice, of freedom in Burundi. And that is why they went to the streets. They went to the streets to say no to a corrupt government, a government that is notorious for extrajudicial killings, for silencing the media or anyone who thinks otherwise. And yes, to a new Burundi with no ethnicity, a new Burundi where the competence of the leader is what will determine whether he sits at the top of the country or not. A Burundi that is visionary, that is forward-thinking, a Burundi that is puts development first and not revenge, as we have seen in the language of the ruling party today. It is filled with revenge. It is filled with reminiscing stories of the former massacres that we have had in Burundi, which are tragic, absolutely tragic. What happened in 1972 is a tragedy, but it is not an excuse to use that, and they use that a lot in their speeches, in what I call hate speech. It's not an excuse today to continue to massacre people because you suspect. Because I, Abu, who is here today, look like a Tutsi, I'm a Tutsi. So you're going to reprimand me for what happened 30 years ago. It is absolutely unfair, and it is what is really driving the ruling party today. Really, in May 2015, the CNDD-FDD had an option of putting in another CNDD-FDD candidate. You cannot tell me that CNDD-FDD equals Pierre Nkurunziza. You cannot tell me that that party did not have anyone else to present. And if that had been the case, we would not be where we are today. So it is incredible irresponsibility to have taken that step forward of the third term. But what is even worse are the consequences of that term. You know, over 1,000 people killed, over 5,000 people unjustly detained, over 250,000 people, Shaka, over 250,000 people who today are refugees across the region. And although they often like to bring up the case of Rwanda, I would like to remind the ambassador here and anyone who's listening that the vast majority of those refugees are in Tanzania, and the vast majority of them are Hutus, and that they are living in abject conditions. This is unacceptable.
I think your point is well made, Katie. What about Mr. Ambassador? How do you respond to that?
Every time when we had elections in the past, we had such excuses. Mm-hmm. When the day was killed, some people said the elections maybe was not well organized. Why? Yari on the world, because the elections were well organized.
Is it because perhaps some people, the wrong person, won?
You know, some people in Burundi, when they are not popular, when they realize that they can win the popularity from the population, they used to use other means. You know, military coup have had all the regimes before it was military coup, etc. So we think time has come to listen to the population of Burundi, to listen to what they want, because they deserve respect. You know, under the leadership of President Nkurunziza, Burundi has transformed itself from a country driven by ethnic tensions, ethnic suspicions, mm-hmm. to one in which the two major ethnic groups, namely Hutu and Tutsi, share the power.
You
this
keep
is
talking
reality.
About Hutu and Tutsi, but what about the Gano? What about the Twa?
The Twa are on board. The Gano also are on board. And this is reality. You can see from the office of the president, those working there, the vice president, second vice president, the office. You can go in all administration at all level, even in embassies. In all embassies, you can start in the embassy in Burundi, in Washington, D.C., there is ethnic gender balance. And even also people coming from all provinces of Burundi, what was not the case before.
So what is the problem?
It's very, very important to know that.
What is the problem? Because you are not going to restore peace and stability in your country unless you are able to put your fingers on precisely what the problem is so that it can be solved.
I think those excuses of the past, just to ignore the wish of the population, we have to solve that problem. And democracy, it's a process. You can't solve problem in one day. You understand? It's a process. And this crisis has shown really how we made progress in terms of national reconciliation. Some politicians used to manipulate population based on ethnic issues, on religious issues. Now they realize that the people of Burundi have changed. So what is very, very, very positive. Regarding the election of President Nkurunziza, allow me to recall that the Constitutional Court clarified ambiguous clauses in the Constitution and ruled that President Nkurunziza was qualified to run for his last term. President Nkurunziza has clearly said,
allow me to continue, Ambassador.
Please. I have not interrupted you.
Yes, I do hope that we will. Katie, please. Yes, and I hope we will receive equal airtime, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, President Nkurunziza has clearly stated that this is his last term. And in 2020, a new political leader will be elected to serve in the office of the president. Instead of losing time, I would like to advise some politicians to start working the population to ensure that they will win in 2020, because time is running fast.
Otherwise, we will be surprised again. Well, time happens not to be our best ally, but let me ask you the last question, Frederick. You heard what, of course, both parties have said. If we are talking about peace and reconciliation here, what about the fact that in the Arusha Peace Accords, included is the establishment of a Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission? What is that?
Yeah, that is probably one of the things that may have even triggered the problems that Burundi has at this point. You know, remember,
in what way?
That commission was, it normally had to start the following year. That commission was only launched a year ago, 15 years after. It means there are so many politicians in Burundi who have committed crimes, and the setting up of this commission is, you know, worries a lot so many people. They do not want this commission really to start working. And that is one of the problems, one of the underlying problems that is never talked about publicly.
Very interesting, very interesting. We have to go, of course. I'm afraid that we're going to have to lose you, Frederick, but it has been a pleasure having you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're most welcome, sir.
Sure.
You are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. And still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here's our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan. Our letter of the week comes from Okia James in Uganda, who writes, "The African Union should intervene in Burundi because they have a strong force, especially the Ugandan soldiers who have vast experience. Burundi is in a deep hole, but the United Nations can also come in to help save lives."
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen. Take it away again, Ayen.
Well, thanks again, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. Peace remains tenuous in Burundi following the killing of a senior military official, his wife and daughter, last Monday. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what do you think about the United Nations possibly providing armed forces to stop the violence and provide security in Burundi? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Burundi Violence. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Martin Nyalusi, who writes, "I think the UN should go in order to avoid more refugee deaths and starving in Burundi. And it seems that the AU is toothless." And let's go to another tweet from Felix, who tweets, "Yes, the UN should help, and that also will contribute to reduce violence." And our last tweet is from Decanio, who tweets, No need. Our African Union has totally failed to promote peace and security to country members. Well, Shaka, some very interesting takes. Your take.
Very interesting indeed. Katie, I hope that you've been following very closely. Your reaction to the audience, the audience, please.
Okay, so first on the UN deployment, I think you're asking the wrong question. The question is not whether or not the UN should be deploying peacekeepers or police in Burundi at the moment. The question is how soon and how many will they be able to deploy. The protection of civilians is of paramount importance today. As you have heard earlier in the report that you aired, the Human Rights High Commissioner for the United Nations, has spoken clearly about the human rights violations that are ongoing in Burundi. There are countless reports, Shaka. Every month there is a report, either from the Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, from the United Nations, the European Union, or various parties, showing the level of human rights violations, showing how much torture. I'd like to speak specifically about torture and about how people are abducted and taken into illegal detention centers, tortured in acid, tortured, and this by state agents, which all these are really the characteristics of a dictatorship. Shaka, being a Ugandan, I know that you know this very well. This is exactly the kind of state attitude that we've had in Africa under Idi Amin Dada and many other dictators across the continent. When you are in a democratic state, there is no room for torture. There is no room for silencing the media. There is no room for abducting people. These are people in uniforms who are abducting civilians. So truly, the people of Burundi, 1 year later, they have fought. They have resisted as much as they could, peacefully as much as they could. Everybody, the entire region, the continent, the United Nations has let Burundians down. It's high time that the United Nations grew some guts and actually stepped in and did their job, which is to protect civilians. And not only to protect them, but among the things that are needed, for instance, are a corridor to enable people to flee. Do you know that today there are many, many people who wish to flee Burundi because they are threatened and are not able to, because the roads are filled with government agents who will, who tooth comb the cars and the roads every day. This is the state that we are in. So the ambassador is sitting, okay, of course, sitting here giving you the version of his government, the same government that's perpetrating his acts. And but what I'll ask, of you and the audience or anyone else, is to actually review the facts. So you cannot tell me that the United Nations, the UNHCR, with this number of refugees, today they were at over 270,000. I checked the numbers today.
Thank you.
You cannot tell me, allow me to finish this point, that the Human Rights Commissioner, the United, the European Union, the United Nations again, the African Union, the United States, where you are, all these people are conspiring and cooking up data of how people are being tortured.
Thank
really,
you.
Let's be real.
Thank you.
And I hope you'll let me also react perhaps a bit later about what has been said before as well.
Thank you, Kate. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I have to frankly say that I'm often amused why when people are talking about fundamental abuse of people's human rights, especially in Uganda, they keep going back to the 1970s and Field Marshal Idi Amin Dada. When they talk about abusing fundamental human rights in the DRC, they keep going back to the days or the years under Mobutu Sese Seko, without, in fact, referencing to the people who are in charge today. Let me come back to you, Ayen, and of course, it's all yours.
Thank you, Shaka. And we have just a few more Facebook comments. Let's go to one from Bertha Namakundo from Zambia, who says, if dialogue has failed, then the United Nations can come in with its armed forces. It's not a better option, but some African leaders are selfish and greedy. And let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Rasid Juma, who says, from Russia, who says, this time around, the United Nations should send in peace enforcers, and those who seek to commit genocide should be forced to comply. And then finally, our last Facebook comment comes from David Ayebare, who says, there is no need for UN forces in Burundi. How long has the United Nations stabilization mission been in Congo? Why are UN mission forces not deployed in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen? Are the only forces mandated to keep peace in Africa? Well, Shaka, some very interesting points made. Your take.
Very interesting. Ernest, it's all yours.
Yes, Shaka. Today, we have to recognize that the insurgents, since the beginning, April 2015, have received support in terms of military training, military equipment from outside of Burundi.
Specifically where?
Specifically, it's clear Rwanda is involved in destabilizing Burundi. Many UN NGOs, United Nations experts.
Do you have incontrovertible evidence on that?
Let me continue. Many NGOs, especially NGOs reports, UN experts reports, and many journalists have really reported the fact, even the U.S. government higher officials recognized the fact during the hearing on the situation in Central African region on February 10th, 2016 mm-hmm. in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So we would really want to urge the international community to follow the example set by U.S. government by calling Rwanda to stop feeding insecurity in Burundi, because Burundian and Rwandan deserve to live in peace. They are brothers, we are sisters, we are all members of East African community. So we need to promote regional integration, trade, and development. And this fact is really causing a lot of trouble in Burundi and also in the region. This is the fact.
Interesting. Thanks, Ayen, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, it's my pleasure, Shaka. And that does it for today's social media segment, but the conversation continues online. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate with us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss politics in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Join host Shaka Sali, his panel of guests, and me, Ayen Bior, your social media reporter, as we talk about the DRC. That's next week on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Ayen, and welcome back. Today we are talking about the ongoing political crisis in Burundi. Our distinguished guests are Ernest Ndabashinze, Burundian ambassador to the United States, and Keti Nivyabandi, a Burundian poet and activist. It means, of course, she belongs to others. Mm-hmm. I have to say, frankly, that once again, I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, sir.
You're most welcome. Now, let me come back to you immediately, Ernest. You were accusing Rwanda for interfering in the affairs, internal affairs of Burundi. That is a very serious charge, because Rwanda happens not only to be a member of the same regional grouping, the East African Community, of which, of course, the Secretary General is a Burundi, beginning from this week. The people of Rwanda and Burundi, historically, pretty much are the same. You share the same culture. There was a time when I got a sense, frankly, that there was a very good chemistry between the two leaders, both one in Kigali and the other one in Bujumbura. What happened? What is Rwanda's motive in this? Is it about regime change? And if so, why?
You know, Shaka, the reality on the ground is there. The facts are there. Many weapons have been caught in cars coming from Rwanda. Reports are available. This is the reality. We have to focus on the means to solve the problem. Whether what happened, the reasons, what is important today is to address this issue. And we continue to call Rwanda to stop feeding security, because when your neighbor is having problem, it's not good. You have problem also, because you are brothers, you are neighbors, you are a member of family. And we have reached today a level of cooperation with some former insurgents. Roughly 30 of them testified on national TV how they have been recruited, where they obtained in Rwanda,
how they got it. Hold it, Katie.
No,
you'll get your time. Hold it, Katie, please.
Well,
give me the opportunity. Please give me the opportunity to be the moderator.
I think democracy is also to listen to others. I listen carefully what the lady is saying. I should ask her also to listen to what I say, whether she agrees with me or not. Mm-hmm. This is democracy. You see, we have to learn how to work, how to react in a democracy. I was saying that some of them decided to surrender to the security forces when they realized that they've been manipulated by some politicians. So they are cooperating with security forces in Burundi. They testified on everything, how they have been recruiting, when they've been trained, which type of weapon they received from Rwanda. And of course, when you have those kind of information, it's very important to dismantle the network of the criminals. It's why today, on May 4, 2016, the security has decreased in Burundi.
But wait a minute, Mr. Ambassador. Someone might say that's not really the exact picture. Yes, people can be paraded in a television studio and say perhaps what they have actually been told to say. What about that? Were they in fact voluntarily making those statements, or have they in fact been intimidated and perhaps coerced to make those statements?
What is sure? There's reports. Refugees International made a report regarding investigation in the camp in Rwanda. You have a report, a report to Security Council made by a team of experts upon the Security Council who came up with some insurgents coming from Rwanda through DRC when Rwanda realized that our border is high controlled. Mm. We have seen people attacking from Rwanda, and even diplomats in Bujumbura went in Kayanza to see them. So we have captured cars at the border full of weapons. So they are proof.
Interesting.
Proof on there.
Interesting.
The question today is to make sure that Rwanda take the right decision to stop feeding security. Because I think at the end, it's not in the interest of Rwanda to continue feeding security in Burundi, like what happened in the Eastern DRC in the past with Sendi Die of Rankunda, M23, etc., etc.
Let me go to your colleague on Skype.
This agenda of destabilizing neighboring counties at the end, it's not good for Rwanda themselves.
So Nibyamandi, by the way, first of all, let's face it, we are brothers and sisters here. Your name, for example, in my indigenous language would pretty much mean the same thing, meaning you belong to others. Nibyamandi, in my language, that's the way it would be said. Having said that, let's just have a civil discussion because this is a family, really. Your reaction?
Thank you, Shaka. First of all, I would like to clarify, I do not belong to others.
But the name means something clear. Like, what about the name?
There are many interpretations, and I'm really not here to talk about the name. I find it very interesting that the ambassador is bringing up Rwanda today as the instigator of the crisis in Burundi at the moment. And it's a narrative that we are hearing a lot coming from Burundi government officials. I say that it's very interesting because they seem to have forgotten that Rwanda, until 2015, was a great ally of Burundi. I remember that in, I believe it was 2008, Rwanda actually footed the bill of the Burundi government to for its membership to the East African Community of $1 million. When the markets in Burundi burned down, Rwanda sent a helicopter, and you seemed very pleased at the time. In 2010, when President Nkurunziza was sworn in, I believe President Kagame was the only president who attended. So very strange and very interesting, this sudden shift in diplomatic relations between Burundi and Rwanda, and why suddenly Rwanda would be having this interest to destabilize Burundi after years of great cooperation. The other question I'd like to ask is, you know, in May 2015, was it Rwandans who were demonstrating in the streets of Burundi asking for the constitution to be respected, for the Arusha Peace Accords to be respected? Was it Rwanda that shot those protesters, or was it Burundi? And therefore, beginning a spiral of violence and of repression. Is it Rwanda that is torturing opposition members and anyone who thinks differently from the government? You mentioned earlier, Mr. Ambassador, that the majority of Burundians do not want Nkurunziza to be in power. Then if you are so confident in the majority that you have, that your party has, why silence the opposition as you have had? You know, why shoot members? Why kill? Why abduct? Why murder members of the opposition? And not only them, but also human rights defenders. Why threaten human beings, regular civilians like myself, for instance, who is currently a refugee because of this? I would like to remind you that I was tear-gassed by your own. I, a woman who went there with no weapon, with only my bare hands, and I was with the women who were, some of them were 70 years old. Why repress us? Why tear gas, simple civilians, your own civilians, if you are so confident in the power that you have, in the majority that you have, and, it just doesn't add up at all. So, again, I would like to emphasize that this is the, Mr. Ambassador, I almost actually feel I empathize with you as a human being, having to come here and defend this, the indefendable, because what is happening in Burundi, as we have talked about many, many times, is being done by men in uniform. It's documented. Sadly, there is a blackout. There's only little information that's coming out because, again, all institutions that defend human rights have been kicked out of the country, or they have been closed, or people have been jailed. So it's what we see is only the tip of the iceberg, only the tip of the iceberg. I receive photographs every day and messages every day of people who are trying to flee, and these are regular people. I have met protesters who were shot, who were amputated, and who were shot by the police. I met them myself. Young men who went to the streets to demand change, and now you're silencing everybody. In what name? I don't know if that is democracy, when we need to redefine democracy. What the repression that is happening today, I think the closest thing that to me, it reminds me of the Tiananmen repression in 1989 in China, where, you have an attempt from the people to say, no, this is not right. This is, we must respect our laws. And a total repression, total, most brutal repression for, ongoing for years, silencing everybody. This does not honor you, doesn't honor and it doesn't honor Burundi, and it is not a symbol of leadership. And lastly, when you say that you know, for the past 10 years, the President Nkurunziza has brought Burundi together. I would like to remind you, Mr. Ambassador, that as we sit today, Burundi has now fallen to be the poorest country, according to the IMF. It, not only is it the poorest, it's also the hungriest in the world. Quite an achievement, indeed. And then again, we wonder why people are standing up and saying, you know, and saying no. And again, they do so with the limited means that they have. They still do so peacefully. Can I remind you that for the first time in the history of Africa, in the history of protests in Africa, Burundian protesters for a very long time were not harming any, you know, were not vandalizing anyone, were not harming any shops. There were a very few incidents of, including one man who was burned, which is extremely unfortunate. But when you look at the violence that was inflicted on these protesters,
Kate,
and
please,
that continues
Kate,
to be done,
time is
time is not our best ally.
Shaka. Yes. Let me ask you one question, and please, I want a very short answer. You talked, of course, about last year's protests in the streets. You probably remember that, among other things, the protesters said if President Nkurunziza wanted to be a life president, he should go to Uganda. To what extent is President Yoweri Museveni acceptable to you as a mediator?
I find it difficult. And, you know, again, thank you for giving me the opportunity to broaden this beyond Burundi.
30 seconds, please. 30 seconds,
please. Into the region. This is a pattern. It's not only in Burundi. It's a very contagious disease that we are having of presidents who hang on to power. It's happening in DRC. It's happening. We saw what happened during your elections in Uganda. It's happening in Congo, Brazzaville. It's going to spread. And unless we step in and put a final stop to it and stop tiptoeing around these dictators as if they are monsters we are afraid of, then this is going to spread and we are back to the years of full-blown dictatorship that we had in the 70s. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have to have to give the ambassador the last word. In fact, before that, I can ask you this question. The World Happiness Report of 2016 update ranks Burundi as the world's least happy nation. Are you aware of that? Why?
Yeah, I'm aware on that. You know, I have a background of sociologist. It depends on how the investigation was made. It's a cultural issue. The issue of happiness is cultural. So if you ask the same questions in Uganda, in Sri Lanka, in France,
in Afghanistan,
for sure you will
in
have...
In Iraq,
we have, we
in
have
Syria,
different,
in North Korea,
you have different responses. You have to adjust questions, tailor-made questions considering the culture of a given county. So this is very important. So regarding what Katie said...
You have 40 minutes.
Yes.
40 seconds.
Such a narrative, you know, really, such narrative can convince only people who don't know Burundi. There is yet on the facts. When people are throwing grenades, killing innocent people, targeting leaders, and they're claiming at the same time that they are demonstrating peacefully, it's a very strange notion of demonstration. So,
you want to
it's
see my
very
pictures?
Important.
Please.
May I
Katie,
like to continue? It's very important to know that such a narrative, such a process of denying institutions, denying the constitution, changing it with violent means, must have an end.
Unfortunately,
we suffered from that.
Unfortunately, Mr. Ambassador, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ernest Ndabashinze, Burundian ambassador to the United States, and Keti Nivyabandi, a Burundian poet and activist who joined us via Skype from the Canadian city of Calgary. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Burundi. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.